Welcome to the Age of Napoleon. As always, before we get started, I want to thank you for your support. The show has grown by leaps and bounds this year. Sir Ridley Scott probably deserves some of the credit for that, but we would be nowhere without you guys chipping in financially and helping spread the word. Thank you for your support. I hope you're all enjoying a nice end-of-the-year holiday, and best wishes for the coming year. Once again, I've been inundated with requests to talk about my impressions of the new Napoleon film, now that it's actually out in theaters. I'll start by saying that I had a really good time watching it. I've seen it twice now, and both times I have found myself swept up in the story. The film has a lot of problems, and I'll get into those in a few minutes, but I've always found it best to start film reviews with the positives. Scott's Napoleon very much had the look and feel of the era. From beginning to end, almost without interruption, I felt immersed in late 18th, early 19th century Europe. The people responsible for the costumes, sets, and locations really knocked it out of the park. I have seen some people criticizing the movie for looking a bit dull and washed out, and I can definitely see where they're coming from. There were scenes where a little more light, contrast, and color might have enhanced the experience. But overall, I think they were successful in achieving that painterly look I talked about in the last dispatch. I thought the acting was almost universally good. I enjoyed basically every performance. There were a lot of actors I wished had gotten more screen time because I found their portrayals of these people so interesting. If you are a fan of veteran British character actors, this movie is for you. Like a lot of big-name directors, Scott clearly has a lot of options of who to work with, and he made some good choices. Joaquin Phoenix's portrayal of Napoleon has received criticism from some, but I basically liked it. As we've talked about on the show, Bonaparte was a somewhat awkward figure, particularly as a young man. He was an introvert by nature, and generally very sober and serious, and had a big melancholy streak. Clearly, the filmmakers were trying to showcase this side of his character, and I think it came through. I did have my problems with the film's version of Napoleon, but I would chalk most of them up to the writing, rather than Phoenix's performance. I think he did a fine job with what he was given. There is one casting choice I have to criticize. How did we end up with a brown-haired Marshal Ney? I suspect this was a composite character, and Ney was combined with Marshal Joachim Murat, Napoleon's friend, brother-in-law, and cavalry commander, who does not appear in the film. The guy they got to play Marshal Ney looks quite a bit like the real Murat. These were two of Napoleon's marshals who were both famous for bravery and pride. You can see why they might have decided to combine them. But it just felt so wrong to see a character named Marshal Ney without his trademark red hair and ruddy complexion. That was one of Ney's nicknames, Le Rougeau, the ruddy one. Maybe they can fix it with CGI for the director's cut. There were a few scenes I particularly enjoyed. I thought the movie was generally at its strongest when it was depicting politics and diplomacy. The whole film has a somewhat strange tone. At times, it almost feels like a satire or even slapstick comedy. There are parts where it works well and parts where it doesn't. The scenes depicting politics and diplomacy lend themselves best to this kind of depiction, because there often is something outrageous or even faintly ridiculous about the real history, with all the bloviating politicians and slimy, dishonest diplomats. This is something a lot of historical movies miss. I think people sometimes assume that any fiction about the past has to be grandiose, serious, and focused primarily on imparting the facts. But anyone who has taken a close look at any significant historical event knows that there is usually at least a touch of farce. When unprecedented events take place, the people in the middle of them usually have little idea what to do, and have no choice but to improvise with limited information. This can result in a somewhat uncanny atmosphere, and a lot of crazy behavior. Ridley Scott's Napoleon really leans into this. I thought it was most effective in the sequence depicting the coup of 18 Brumaire, which first brought Napoleon to power. As you hopefully remember from our episodes on the coup, it really was a farcical, sloppy affair that very nearly failed. Going in, I thought the central conceit of the coup, forcing the majority of the directors to resign to bring down the government, might be a little too esoteric for a big-budget Hollywood film, but they really do show it more or less how it happened. They even use a chunk of Lucien Bonaparte's real speech to the troops, given just before they swept into the legislature. I almost wish the whole movie had been about the coup. I thought it was by far the best part of the film, fun to watch with all the madcap nervous energy of the real event. I would have loved to have seen more of Julian Rind Tutte as the Abbé Sieyès. He only really appears in one scene, but I thought he perfectly captured Sieyès's ego and pretentiousness. And as you probably gathered from the regular episodes, I've always found Sieyès an interesting and compelling character. So Brumaire was my favorite scene, but there were a few others that stood out. First, Napoleon examining the mummy in Egypt. This image is actually borrowed from a painting by the artist Maurice-Henri Orange, but that's not a criticism. All directors borrow images, and this is a good one to choose. In under a minute, it hints at the deeper intellectual, philosophical, and even spiritual motivations that brought Napoleon to Egypt. The whole Egypt sequence of the movie is so short that they needed to be economical, and including this image was a really smart way to communicate a lot in a very short time. I also enjoyed the subsequent scene of Junot telling Napoleon about Josephine's infidelity. It's a conversation I've tried to imagine myself so many times, and I thought their interpretation of it was very interesting. I was slightly surprised that Scott didn't include Napoleon's funny and slightly pathetic response to this information. Apparently he was so angry that he just growled the word divorce over and over again for several seconds, which felt like it would have fit well with the tone of this movie. I also enjoyed the scene of Napoleon and Emperor Francis of Austria negotiating after Austerlitz. This didn't really happen, but I felt like it did a good job of getting across how the crowned heads of Europe viewed Napoleon. That strange combination of fear, condescension, curiosity, and caution. I thought Miles Jupp, who played Francis, did a really good job of embodying those refined manners of the high aristocracy, while also getting across that his character had no idea how to approach this frightening, outrageous person. And for his part, Phoenix as Napoleon seems to either not notice or not care, and is disarmingly frank and magnanimous through the whole scene, which felt true to life. I also enjoyed basically any scene that included Talleyrand. I am on record as a Talleyrand fan, and I thought Paul Reiss did a good job capturing him in all his sleazy glory. I also enjoyed the ending on St. Helena. It was more or less how I pictured it. And I thought the voiceover from the dead Josephine was extremely effective. I suppose that's as good a segue as any to delve into the film's depiction of the relationship between Napoleon and Josephine. After all, forgive the pun, this is the heart of the movie. I do think they did a good job depicting the dynamic at the beginning of their romance, with Napoleon pursuing her in his own strange way, and Josephine unsure about him. Unable to take him totally seriously, and hedging her bets through her affair with Hippolyte Charles. But, as we discussed in our main episodes, their relationship was transformed by Napoleon's rapid and dramatic rise to fame during the First Italian Campaign, and by the power he wielded as the de facto ruler of all northern Italy. Josephine was very much attracted to power, and Napoleon suddenly became very powerful. As the movie depicts, Napoleon was shattered by the revelation of his wife's infidelity. He still loved her and still wanted her, but was never able to totally forgive her. And so their marriage became something of a tug of war. They took turns hurting each other and forgiving each other. Then the cycle started again. I'm not sure the film totally captures this. Many of the scenes of their relationship are more reminiscent of that early phase of their marriage, when Josephine was still holding all the cards, and Little Bonaparte, as she called him at that time, was working to impress her and get her attention. I have always found the dynamic of their later relationship much more interesting. Two people who loved each other and needed each other, but had also hurt each other badly, many times, over the course of years, and probably, on some level, even hated each other a little bit. The discussions around their failure to achieve a pregnancy and the wider Bonaparte family's hatred of Josephine did feel relatively close to reality. It might have been interesting to see more of Napoleon's mistresses. In particular, I've always been fascinated by Pauline Forest, the so-called Cleopatra, who was Napoleon's companion in Egypt, and Maria Walewska, that young Polish aristocrat we discussed earlier this year. Their stories might have added some more depth to a film that was largely about Bonaparte's romantic life. Then again, they did only have 2.5 hours to work with. Anyway, with the romance out of the way, let's talk battles. I was of two minds about the battle scenes in this film. On one hand, they managed to get some really great visuals. In particular, the images of the coalition troops sinking into the lake at Austerlitz are very memorable. On the other hand, none of these scenes give you any idea whatsoever of how these engagements were actually fought, or what they might have actually looked like. Almost every battle is just a formless horde charging at a single line of infantry. It looked very cool and dramatic, but as you guys know, there was a lot more to these things than a big brawl. Every battle also seemed somewhat small-scale compared to the real thing. If your only knowledge of the Napoleonic Wars came from this movie, you would probably think the typical battle lasted maybe a couple hours, and involved a few thousand men on each side. In a film with a huge budget and real professional Hollywood computer graphics, I was expecting more of a sense of scale. As I talked about in the last dispatch, I don't want to dwell too much on the question of historical accuracy. Obviously, there was very little. However, there were a few inaccuracies that were so glaring or seemingly pointless that they annoyed me a bit. Why were the encampments always depicted as being only a few feet behind the lines of battle? Why were the infantry and the cavalry almost always mixed together? Why were there always entrenchments? And perhaps more importantly, why did the British leave their entrenchments at Waterloo to form squares? But my biggest criticism of the battle scenes was the role of Napoleon himself. Perhaps the single most notable thing about Bonaparte is his genius as a military commander, but I don't think any of these battle scenes give the audience a sense of why he was so successful. They didn't even really show what it was like to command a Napoleonic army, arguably the single thing Napoleon was best at. He utters a single phrase, or even just makes a hand gesture, and the battle commences. We never really see him strategizing, conferring with his marshals, or dealing with his staff. Obviously, trying to cover Napoleon's entire career in only 2.5 hours means a lot of things have to get cut. But that seems like a pretty big and important side of his character to just ignore. This brings me to my biggest criticism of the film. Near the end, we see Napoleon returning from Elba and confronting the 5th Regiment of the Line, who have been sent to stop his march back to power and arrest him. We see Napoleon open his overcoat and approach the soldiers alone. They are almost instantly disarmed by his charisma and nostalgia for the Empire, and are quickly convinced to join him. This really did happen, not unlike the way they depict in the movie. However, I found myself wondering if the audience would believe it. After seeing 2 hours of Napoleon depicted mostly as an awkward, comical brute, I would imagine at least some people were confused that the soldiers didn't just shoot him to finally be rid of this idiot. There is basically nothing in the movie that would suggest Bonaparte had anything to offer France, Europe, or the world. In reality, millions of people passionately believed in him. Hundreds of thousands risked their lives in his armies, some involuntarily, but some quite eagerly. Even today, over 200 years after his death, he remains one of the most widely discussed historical figures of all time. Nothing in this movie suggests that would be the case. In fact, Napoleon often appears quite small, even pathetic. We do see that he is capable of winning stunning battlefield victories. But, as we've discussed, how he actually did that remains unexplored. And so, we're left with a somewhat trivial and vacant portrait of Napoleon. He's not the Napoleon of the romantic paintings alluded to in the cinematography, and more of the petty, angry tyrant of a British propaganda cartoon. For a movie called Napoleon, there is not much depth to his character. The filmmakers seem to have been more interested in poking fun at him than exploring what made him tick, or what made him such a significant historical figure. The final frame of the movie, showing the casualty numbers of various battles and campaigns of the Napoleonic Wars, with the strong implication that Napoleon was solely and personally responsible for each one of them, definitely left a sour taste in my mouth, and confirmed my feeling that, whatever its strengths, this film essentially presented the traditional, simplistic British propaganda image of Bonaparte. The love story added a bit of depth, but in my opinion, not enough to truly transcend the two-dimensional cartoon Napoleon, who is so familiar from popular culture. And so, I would say that although I found the movie fun and engaging, I also see it as a huge missed opportunity. All that money and all that talent devoted to telling this story, but it seems no one was curious enough to really dig in and get beyond the hackneyed caricatures of Bonaparte. Of course, I'm not outraged by this. I don't feel any need to defend Napoleon's honor. People have a wide range of views on Napoleon, and they're entitled to them. But purely from a storytelling perspective, it's much more interesting to watch a fully realized character than it is to watch a two-dimensional character, cobbled together out of old propaganda and pop psychology. I think perhaps the filmmakers tried to do too much. They might have been better served to pick a specific tone and run with it. Either lean all the way into the comic elements and turn the whole movie into a satire, or actually take Napoleon seriously and explore who he was and what he represented. Instead, we're left with what is, in some ways, a very odd movie. With so many years to cover, it moves at a breakneck pace. Much like their Emperor Francis after Austerlitz, the filmmakers seem not to know what to make of Napoleon, and maybe even a little afraid to approach him directly, preferring to poke fun at certain superficial elements of his story, rather than taking a hard look at a complicated figure. Before this film came out, I always said there had never been a truly great cinematic depiction of Napoleon. I'm sorry to say, that is still true. Scott's Napoleon is certainly a fun movie, but there is not much substance to it. Bonaparte has often been referred to as a sphinx. He is notoriously complicated and hard to know. You don't get that from this portrayal. In fact, this version of Napoleon is almost the opposite, a facile character, motivated only by lust and ego. So to sum up, I have now spent 5 hours of my life watching this movie, and I will definitely watch the director's cut when it's available. However, I had been hoping for something more. What could have been a really unforgettable movie wound up being not much more than a pleasant way to pass a few hours. Ah well, maybe the director's cut will prove me wrong. That's all for now. I'll be back to you in a few weeks with another regular episode. Until then, thanks for listening.